Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Quick hits, COVID-19 and monkeypox vaccine clinic. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled a COVID-19 and monkeypox vaccine clinic from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. today. COVID-19 vaccines are free and walk-in only. First come, first serve. Monkeypox vaccines are by appointment only. To schedule an appointment for pre-screening or for more information, call 432-227-2137. Exhibition. Midland College, 3600 North Garfield Street, Midland, has scheduled an exhibition of paintings by Nancy Bernard from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday to Thursday and from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday through February 17th. For more information, email rbell@midland.edu. Bilingual Storytime, the Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled a bilingual story time event at 10 a.m. today. Visit ector.lib.tx.us. Rotary Club Luncheon. The Rotary Club of Midland has scheduled a luncheon meeting at noon today at the Rotary Community Room, Midland College. Featured speaker will be Kelsey Jones, Director of Programs at High Sky Children's Ranch. Visit tinyurl.com/795u4vff. Read to Felix. The Ector County Library Children's Department has scheduled Read to Felix at 4 p.m. today at the library, 3rd floor, 321 West 5th Street. Felix is a therapy dog that loves to be read to. Visit tinyurl.com/5ej9mks9. State of Downtown Odessa Award Ballot. The annual State of Downtown Odessa Award Ballot will be open through 5 p.m. February 8th. Vote for your favorite Odessa people and businesses. For more information or to vote, visit tinyurl.com/57kjryey. PPOA Valentine's Day Dinner and Comedy. The PPOA, Professional Police Officers Association of Odessa, has scheduled a night of comedy with James Johan, February 14th at the MCM Elegante Waterfront Atrium Room, 5200 East University Boulevard. The doors open at 6:30 p.m., dinner will be served at 7 p.m., and the show will start at 7:45 p.m. Tickets are $50 per person with tables for eight available starting at $400. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/4hwvkyd8. Finishing high school is a great way to begin the new year. Library program helps adult residents kickstart 2023 by earning an accredited high school diploma through Gale Presents Excel Adult High School. With the new year comes New Year's resolutions. People's most popular picks include healthy eating, exercise, and money management. It's also a great time to focus on advancing one's education and career opportunities. Ector County Library now offers a program called Excel Adult High School, designed to help busy adults who have aged out of the education system obtain their high school diploma online with the convenience of a self-paced schedule. Local residents age 21 and up who are looking to advance their careers, prepare for workforce entry, or continue their education can apply online for an Excel Adult High School Scholarship through Ector County Library. There is no cost to students for the program, but enrollment is limited and requires a library card. The start of the new year is a perfect time to set a new life course and prepare for a brighter future. Earning a high school diploma is a key stepping stone to achieving long-term goals, Library Director Howard K. Marks said. By offering Excel Adult High School, we are empowering our residents to seek new opportunities and transform their lives. we're delighted to partner with the Ector County Library to offer Excel Adult High School and give residents the chance to obtain this important credential and open the door to new opportunities, said Paul Gazzolo, Senior Vice President and General Manager for Gale. Excel Adult High School is brought to public libraries by Gale, part of Zengate Group. The Ector County Library will be awarding 3 free scholarships to qualified adult learners on a first-come, first-served basis. Excel Adult High School is a great solution for those who may need extra academic assistance and flexibility. Once in the program, students are supported by instructors, success coaches, and tutors dedicated to helping them achieve their goals. The online curriculum is accessible 24/7, which is helpful for those balancing work and family obligations. Students are given up to 24 months to complete the program, but many finish sooner because previously earned high school GED or HiSET credits are accepted. Residents can learn more about Excel Adult High School at excelhighschool.org/library-ector or by simply visiting the library's main website, ector.lib.tx.us. The Ector County Library was first established in 1938. It is free and open to the public, serves all ages, has an extensive collection of 200,000 printed books, over 20,000 ebooks, nearly 100 databases, and serves a population of more than 160,000 people locally and regionally. Empty Bowls set this weekend. The 22nd annual West Texas Food Bank Empty Bowls is set for 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at the gallery at Midland College. Admission is $15 per bowl. Tables of 8 are available with a $500 donation, which allows the table to have the pick of the kiln bowls. Bowls are made by Odessa College, Midland College, UTPB, Trinity of Midland, Boys and Girls Club of the Permian Basin, and UTPB STEM Academy. Food is donated by Gerardo's Grill and Cantina, Murray's Deli, and HEB. All proceeds go to the West Texas Food Bank. Call 432-580-6333. Pfluger to serve on Energy Subcommittee. U.S. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, announced on Wednesday that he will serve on the Subcommittee for Energy, Climate, and Grid Security on the House Energy and Commerce Committee under the leadership of Chair Kathy McMorris Rogers, Republican Washington, and Subcommittee Chair Jeff Duncan, South Carolina. Pfluger stated in the press release, "I am thrilled to learn that I will sit on the Energy Subcommittee within the Energy and Commerce Committee. Our new Republican majority understands that we are not in an energy transition. We are in an energy expansion. This subcommittee will drill down into debates on smart energy policy to support this Permian Basin and provide relief to all American families who are suffering from skyrocketing energy bills and inflation. I am proud to be the voice of the Permian Basin and the men and women who provide affordable, abundant, and clean energy to the world. In addition to the Subcommittee on Energy, Climate, and Grid Security, Congressman Pfluger will also serve on the Subcommittee on Environment, Manufacturing, and Critical Minerals under Chair Bill Johnson, Republican, Ohio, and the Subcommittee on Communications and Technology under Chair Bob Latta, Republican, Ohio. Career Fair Robotics Prep coming up. Texas Tech University Health Science Center in Odessa is holding a healthcare career fair from 1 to 3 p.m. today at the TTU HSC PB campus in Odessa. The career fair is being held to provide opportunity for students in the Permian Basin access, interaction, and information on what a career in healthcare would look like. This program is targeted specifically to those students seeking a goal to become a physician and the opportunities they have to attend local schools, including ECISD, a news release said. Additionally, the STEM Academy at UTPB has 5 teams going to the FTC First Tech Challenge League Championship this weekend. One of the teams is in first place, and several of the others are ranked high. All five teams will be preparing for competition at 1 p.m. Friday at STEM. The release said it's more than building robots. First Tech Challenge teams, up to 15 team members, grades 7 through 12, are challenged to design, build, program, and operate robots to compete in head-to-head challenge in an alliance format. Guided by adult coaches and mentors, students develop STEM skills and practice engineering principles, while realizing the value of hard work, innovation, and working as a team. More fire resignations at City. Odessa Fire Rescue is losing another longtime upper management level official. Assistant Chief of Operations Saul Ortega has turned in his retirement papers after more than 30 years with the department. His last day is February 1st. OFR has lost several veteran firefighters to retirement in recent months, including the fire chief and all three of his assistants. Since September, the department has said goodbye to Ortega, Chief John Alvarez, Assistant Chief Joey White, Assistant Chief Rob Huber, and Training Chief Marty Moya. Huber had 27 years with the department, and others served more than 30 years. Jason Cotton, who has more than 25 years with the department, has been named interim chief. Daniel Chavez, who has 19 years with the department, was named assistant chief of EMS in December, but is now assistant chief of fire administration. The city's website currently does not list an assistant chief of EMS. Bradley Reese has been named assistant chief of administration in October, but later asked to be demoted to battalion chief. OFR has been in the news a great deal in recent months due to a large turnover rate and allegations of wrongdoing. On December 13th, the Odessa City Council voted to give firefighters, dispatchers, and police officers raises totaling $7 million over the next 2 years after months of conversations about OFR's turnover rates. Members of the old City Council wanted to wait until a compensation study for all city employees was finished. But once Deidre White, Tom Sprawls, and Mary Willis finished their terms in November and were replaced, the measure was passed in a 5-2 measure. The department has lost more than 70 personnel over the last 2 years, according to records obtained through the Texas Public Information Act. They've lost 3 more firefighters and 2 more cadets since the raises were passed. Among the reasons, a spouse's job change, college, family issues, personal problems, financial issues, and an inability to pass classes. One also took a job in Lubbock. In recent weeks, the city of Odessa has also hired a law firm to investigate an August 2022 event in which several OFR cadets were injured, despite the fact Alvarez said the incident had already been investigated and discipline imposed. According to sources within the city, Alvarez sparked the investigation after noticing cadets had bandaged hands and discovered they'd received blisters during a physical training exercise. The same sources said Moya was suspended for 5 days without pay, and training captain Chris Norrid received a written reprimand as a result of the injuries. The city released documents showing the law firm of Davidson Sheens billing rate is $375 an hour, and the associate attorney rate ranges from $195 to $250 an hour. However, the city has asked the Texas Attorney General's Office for permission to withhold other documents. Assistant City Attorney Kevin McKeithen argued in a January 17th letter, the other documents cannot be disclosed because the investigation was closed and no one was convicted of a crime or given deferred adjudication. However, he also argued the records cannot be disclosed because the city has reopened the investigation. McKeithen also argued the records shouldn't be disclosed because litigation resulting from the incident is reasonably anticipated. Mayor Javier Hoven said Tuesday night he is not concerned about the department of so many experienced leaders in OFR, Nor is he worried. The city has lost 4 of its 6 attorneys since December 13th. No, for the reason is that no position that is vital and crucial is going unattended, Hovind said. There's been a lot of talk about this mass exodus going on. We have over 850 employees. How many people have resigned or retired? What percent? But that's a mass exodus? Hovind said the legal department actually has too many people. It astounds me how all of a sudden we're seeing a reduction, because that's one of my campaign promises, that we are going to make government smaller and leaner and more effective, and that's exactly what's occurring, and now it's being criticized, Hovind said. The resulting firm he hired the day after city manager Michael Marrero was terminated last month began its job Tuesday, Hovind said. T2 will assist the city in finding a replacement for Marrero, but it will also help assess all city departments, Hovind said. We're looking at every department and every position to see what's vital, and we need only to replace those people that are necessary, Hovind said. If you have enough time to sit around the water cooler, then we don't need the position. Hovind said he hopes the study is completed by summer. MC presidential search process detailed. The Midland College Board of Trustees has announced that it has begun the search to identify the next president of Midland College. The board has selected the Association of Community College Trustees to assist with the presidential search process. ACCT's assistance will include providing support with the development of the presidential profile, recruiting highly competitive candidates, and working extensively with the district board. ACCT has conducted over 750 community college searches and brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise to the process. ACCT's mission is to strengthen community college governance through education and advocacy. William Bill Holda will serve as the ACC search consultant and will assist the district board and college community throughout the process. On March 1st, MC will host 3 public forums. The Midland College community is invited and encouraged to participate in a wide-ranging discussion about the qualities, characteristics, and qualifications they are seeking in their next president, and the opportunities and challenges facing Midland College in the years to come. Additionally, the public will have the opportunity to ask questions about the presidential search process. The discussion will be facilitated by Holda. The forums will be held at the Wagner Brown Auditorium in the Allison Fine Art Building at 8 a.m., 11 a.m., and 2 p.m. February 1st. For those who cannot attend the in-person events, a Zoom link is also available. Zoom link for all 3 meetings, tinyurl.com/5n6rcwvz. No RSVP is needed. In addition to the public forums, MC has developed a brief electronic survey. Your anonymous responses to the survey will also be used to inform the development of the draft presidential profile. The survey is available at tinyurl.com/35344250E. Please submit your survey feedback no later than 2 p.m. February 2nd. The Board Presidential Search Committee will review the confidential applications, interview semifinalist candidates, and identify the final candidates to be submitted to the full Board of Trustees for consideration. The Board Search Committee includes Stephen C. Kaiser, Board Search Committee Chair and Chair, Board of Trustees, Charlene M. McBride, Board Search Committee Member and Vice Chairperson, Board of Trustees, Paul Morris, Board Search Committee Member and Immediate Past Chair, Board of Trustees, Scott Kidwell, Board Search Committee Member and Member, Board of Trustees. The full board will interview the final candidates, and all finalists will participate in open forums at Midland College. They anticipate the open forums taking place in May, and they will provide dates, times, and locations once they are confirmed. All employees, students, and community members will be invited to attend the open forums. Feedback forms will be provided to all attendees. and the completed forms will be collected at the end of each forum and provided to the board for review as part of its deliberation process. Reality Fair set today, Complex Community Federal Credit Union will host a CU4 Reality Fair at the Young Women's Leadership Academy, YWLA, 1800 East Wall Street, Midland, at 5:30 p.m. today. The goal is for students to understand the real expenses that they will face in adulthood and the choices they need to make to make ends meet and avoid falling into debt, the news release said. The event will conclude with a dinner provided by CCFCU at 7 p.m. at the same location. More than 25 Midland nonprofits participate in Homeless Count. Midland's Homeless Coalition, in association with the Texas Homeless Network and volunteers from the community, will conduct Midland's largest point-in-time homeless count today in a coordinated statewide effort to measure homelessness across Texas. Over the course of 24 hours, trained volunteers will count and survey individuals who are staying in emergency shelters, transitioning housing, and unsheltered locations, outdoor encampments, streets, cars, and other places not meant for habitation in our community. This count will provide a snapshot of the number of people experiencing homelessness, as well as key characteristics of those individuals and families, a news release said. The result will indicate the minimum number of people experiencing homelessness in our community on any given night. As a note, other forms of homelessness, such as people staying temporarily with friends or those that can come up with enough funds for a hotel-motel, are not included in the PIT count, per HUD guidelines. The release said they recognize that this means that PIT count data will only be representing a fraction of the homeless population in Midland. The PIT count will improve understanding of the needs and circumstances of the people experiencing homelessness in the community. The survey will provide key data on gender, age, ethnicity, veteran status, and more, the release said. Results from the PIT count will be publicly available and the results used to improve our response to homelessness. In the future, successive counts will allow us to measure progress toward the goal of ending homelessness in Midland. The Midland Point in Time Count will be the largest coordinated effort among Midland nonprofit resources community to understand homelessness in the community. I could not be prouder of the work we are doing to ensure we know the size and scope of homelessness in Midland, John Mark Eccles, Midland PIT Count Coordinator, said in the release. Free food, IDs, vaccines, peer support, bus passes, and showers available. Pfluger introduces natural gas bill. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, announced on Wednesday he introduced H.R. 484, the Natural Gas Tax Repeal Act, to strike the natural gas tax imposed by President Joe Biden in the Inflation Expansion Act. New fees or taxes on energy companies will raise costs for customers, creating a burden that will fall most heavily on lower-income Americans, the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, and the Texas Public Policy Foundation LIFE Powered Project released statements in support of the bill. Pfluger stated in the press release, President Biden's promise to end fossil fuels and ensuing actions to cripple the American energy industry are hurting American families. I am proud to stand up for the Permian Basin by introducing legislation to strike the president's new harmful natural gas tax that will drive up the cost of household energy bills and make inflation even worse. Ben Shepherd, president of PBPA, stated in the press release, Congressman Pfluger continues to fight for the American people, the American economy, and American energy securities. Worldwide demand for natural gas continues to grow, and the American people, our economy, and even the world's environment are better off when domestic natural gas production is supported by those in Washington, D.C. This act does just that. Jason Isaac, director of LIFE, powered by TPPF, stated in the press release, Life Powered applauds Representative Pfluger on his efforts to repeal the methane tax created by the Inflation Reduction Act. 32% of Americans have paid a utility bill late in the past 6 months, and imposing a methane tax couldn't happen at a worse time. Repealing this burdensome home heating and stovetop cooking tax will prevent another unnecessary cost from being imposed on Americans struggling to make ends meet. Death notices for Thursday, January 26th. Salvador Sal Hernandez, 54, of Odessa, died Sunday, January 22nd, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. January 27th, St. Joseph Catholic Church. Burial to follow at Sunset Memorial Garden. Father Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by La Paz Funeral, LLC of Odessa. John W. Spencer, 80, of San Angelo, died Tuesday, January 24th in San Angelo. No service has been scheduled. Arrangements are by Harper Funeral Home of San Angelo.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 21, 2023. Viewpoints. Sparks presented PBPA's Top Hand Award by Midland Reporter Telegram. After moving more than a dozen times in 5 years for business and military service obligations, Don Sparks and family put down roots in Midland, going on to found Discovery Operating in 1973. Sparks was honored this week as the Permian Basin Petroleum Association's Top Hand, an award he said belongs not just to him, but to a lot of people I work with that are important and are a part of this honor, too. He believes what makes him a top hand has been his perseverance in hard times, operating wisely in good times, and the family's involvement in the community. Also, Midland Mayor Lori Blong declared January 18 as Don L. Sparks Day, and the Texas House of Representatives passed a resolution, House Resolution 24, congratulating Sparks on being named the 2022 Top Hand by PBPA. Top Hand Recipients: Don Sparks, Autry Stevens, Dick Salisbury, S. Javed Anwar, Carlton E. Beal Jr., Barry A. Beal, Spencer E. Beal, Kelly S. Beal, Mac C. Chase, Curtis W. Mewborn, Howard Parker and Joe Parsley, the Honorable Donald L. Evans, Scott Sheffield, Tim Leach, the Honorable Tom Craddock, Arden and Rosalind Redfern Grover, Ted Collins Jr., Cloyce Talbot and Glenn Patterson, Jim Henry, L.D. Buddy Sipes, Tom L. Brown, Arlen L. Edgar, John F. Younger, Myra Robinson, Todd Aaron, Decker Dawson, Clayton W. Williams Jr., Mac O. Boring Jr., Cy Wagner and Jack Brown, John L. Cox, Robert M. Laybrock, George Gibson, Joe Peavehouse, Carlton Beal Sr., Joe B. McShane Jr., Joseph O'Neill Jr., C.W. Claude Brown, Robert O. Anderson, John E. Reed, Charles Perry, Ed Thompson, Ben Alexander, Eddie Childs, John P. Butler, Stanley Moore.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, January 23rd. Through the perilous fight, UTPB history professor poised to publish new book. Being a huge sports fan and civil rights historian, Derek Katzum, the Catherine Cosper Dunnigan Professor in the Humanities at University of Texas Permian Basin, has penned a new book that combines those themes, politics, and a whole lot more. Not officially titled yet, its working title is Through the Perilous Fight, with a subtitle that includes nationalism, exclusion, and patriotism in American sports. This will be Katzum's fifth book. This is the second of a two-book deal, the first being Flashpoint, How a Little-Known Sporting Event Fueled America's Anti-Apartheid Movement. His publisher is Roman and Littlefield, and Through the Perilous Fight is expected to come out sometime in late 2023. Quote, the book's about the inevitable connections between sports and politics, and it starts with the playing of the national anthem at sporting events, and then goes through the long history of black struggles to be able to participate, women's struggles to be able to participate, Katzum said. It ties in the national anthem protests, the question of patriotism, and the question of exclusion. Quote, sports are supposed to be the sort of ultimate meritocracy, and yet so much of American history they haven't been. So much of global history they haven't been. Sports have been subjected to the same pressures, the same outside forces, the same bigotries, the same prejudices that all the rest of American society has. The forced exclusion of black players in what was then our most popular sport, baseball, from the late 19th century through April 1947, and the exclusion of black players in the NFL from 1933 to 1946, Katzum said. He added that there are a million different racial and gender dynamics that reflect American society. Katzum said Flashpoint was a book he really wanted to write, which is tied in with a lot of the work he's done. He has studied at Rhodes University and has made regular visits to South Africa during the past 25 years. He didn't have a whole lot of time between the two books. Quote, you love all your books like you love your children, but you play favorites. That last book was really important to me. They never said we won't publish this book without the next one, but they kind of sweetened the pot and made it much more appealing to do both books. I've been planning on writing a book on American sports and politics anyway. I'm still young enough that I'll write others in the future. But this was a good time to do it and to get it out. I think that you start reaching a point where you get 5 or 6 books and you're in a different plane as a writer and as a historian and as an academic, Katzum said. He said there's a nice moment when you send the final manuscript in, but almost immediately you're going to start getting editorial feedback. Quote, and then almost immediately, it's going to feel almost immediately, you're reviewing page proofs, and almost immediately you're securing photographs, and almost immediately you're getting people to write blurbs, and almost, so there's never a moment, Katzum said. Quote, there's the moment when the page proofs are finally done. You've done everything where you're pretty close and you feel good, but by that point, it's been 5 months, 4 months, 6 months of finishing up this, and then by the time the book comes out, especially by the time this book comes out, I might have another book really close to be written, he added. It's nice to receive the box of books, end quote. January is Glaucoma Awareness Month. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. Over the course of my marriage, I have learned more about eyes than I ever really wanted to know. My husband was born with a condition called keratoconus. With keratoconus, as a person ages, their corneas get thinner and thinner and shaped more like the end of a football. If untreated, those corneas can get so thin that they rupture, and the person can be blinded. The treatment for keratoconus is corneal transplants. My husband had both of his corneas transplanted in his late teens, early 20s. Fast forward a few years, and my husband was working with a grinder and had a piece of metal fly up into one of his eyes. It scarred one of the transplanted corneas badly, but looking at risk-benefit, the doctors decided not to re-transplant that cornea at that time. Fast forward many more years, and my husband was in an accident that caused his good eye to rupture. 9 surgeries later, despite Herculean efforts, the eye specialists were unable to save his eye. He is healing from a retransplant of the scarred cornea, and we are hopeful it will improve his vision once he is fully healed. During this process, while not technically blind, my husband has been severely visually handicapped. Yet, despite this limitation, my husband continues to go to work every day and teach. Part of the reason, I think, is because one of his closest friends, also a teacher, is blind. This friend showed my husband that a visual handicap does not need to be a limitation. That friend is blind because of glaucoma. While there is no cure for glaucoma, there are treatments to manage glaucoma. That means if it is caught early, damage can be kept to a minimum and blindness can be prevented. That is why it is so important to make sure people are aware of glaucoma, and it is a national health observance in January. Glaucoma is a group of eye diseases that, left untreated, can cause vision loss and blindness by damaging the optic nerve. One of the biggest problems of glaucoma is the symptoms start so gradually, most people don't notice them until there is severe damage. The first symptom is generally loss of peripheral vision, particularly the part of vision that is closest to the nose. If glaucoma goes untreated, it can cause blindness. One type of glaucoma, angle closure glaucoma, can have sudden symptoms: intense eye pain, nausea, red eye, and/or blurry vision. If you have any of those symptoms, seek treatment by going to your eye doctor or an emergency room right away. The most common cause of glaucoma in the U.S. is called open-angle glaucoma. But there are other types of glaucoma: normal tension glaucoma, angle closure glaucoma, also called narrow angle or acute glaucoma, congenital glaucoma, neovascular glaucoma, pigmentary glaucoma, exfoliation glaucoma, and uvectic glaucoma. You can learn more about the types of glaucoma on the National Eye Institute's webpage at tinyurl.com/YFJU4JBR. Anyone, even kids, can get glaucoma, but people at highest risk are people over age 60, especially if they have a Latino heritage, African American heritage, and over age 40, or you have a family history of glaucoma. If you are at risk, the National Eye Institute recommends you get a comprehensive dilated eye exam every 1 to 2 years. Most common types of glaucoma are caused by high eye pressures. If you, like me, hate the air puff test that measures eye pressure, you will be happy to know there are now newer technologies that can measure eye pressure during your annual eye exam that are much less uncomfortable. There are several different treatments for glaucoma, depending on the type of glaucoma you have. They can include medications, which are usually eye drops, laser treatments, and surgery. The most important thing with glaucoma treatment is that it gets started quickly. Treatment can't undo the damage that has already been done, but it can stop glaucoma from getting worse. The biggest lesson I have learned with my husband and his crazy history of eye conditions and eye injuries is that vision is incredibly precious, more precious than I can really express. Vision can also be quite fragile. And with something like glaucoma, if you don't seek preventative care by visiting an eye doctor regularly, that fragility means you could lose much of your vision before you even know it's happening. Please remember this January to protect your vision by seeing an eye doctor regularly.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, January 24th. Midland College hosts Presidential Search Open Forums. Open forums to assist in the search and selection of a new Midland College president will occur at 9 a.m., 11 a.m., and 2 p.m. on February 1st. All will be held on the MC main campus, 3600 North Garfield Street in the Allison Fine Arts Building, Wagner and Brown Auditorium. The forums will be conducted by a third-party search firm and members of the community. MC employees and students are invited to attend one of these important one-hour sessions. For those who cannot attend the in-person events, a Zoom link is always available. Zoom link for all three meetings, tinyurl.com/Y2BRBCFS. Please share this information with those who may have a concerted interest in Midland College and wish to attend. No RSVP is needed. In addition to the public forums, a brief electronic survey has been developed. Your anonymous responses to this survey will also be used to inform the development of the draft presidential profile. The survey is available here, tinyurl.com/5T4AN7KH. Please submit your survey feedback no later than 2 p.m. February 2nd.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, January 25th. This article is entitled, Halliburton Aims to Pay Out Half of Free Cash Flow to Investors, by David Wythe, Bloomberg. Halliburton Company plans to return half of its annual free cash flow to shareholders as the world's biggest provider of fracking services follows its oil and gas clients in giving more profits back to investors. Halliburton announced a 33% hike to its dividend and a resumption of its share buyback program Tuesday after reporting fourth quarter earnings that beat analysts' estimates. The Houston-based firm bought back $250 million in shares during the quarter, ending its streak of being one of only 83 S&P 500 companies and one of just three energy companies that hadn't made repurchases in the past year. These actions demonstrate Halliburton's confidence in our business, customers, employees, and industry outlook, Chief Executive Officer Jeff Miller said in a conference call with analysts and investors. Everything I see today points to oil and gas tightness. Tight global crude supplies have helped drive up profits of energy producers, allowing the industry's service companies to also benefit and find ways to reward their shareholders. SLB, the biggest oilfield service provider, said in November it was boosting its quarterly dividend and resuming share buybacks. The announcement came a week after smaller rival Baker Hughes Company said it was buying back another $2 billion in shares and raising its payout. Halliburton's stock fell 2.7% to $39.47 at 10:40 a.m. in New York, alongside a broader decline in energy stocks and crude prices. Halliburton hiked its quarterly dividend to 12 cents a share a year ago, making its first increase since 2014, when crude prices tumbled from more than $100 a barrel. The number two oilfield service provider by market value said in October it had about $5 billion of share repurchases remaining under its buyback program, which began in 2006. Halliburton had slowed repurchases over the past few years as customers dialed back activity. Halliburton reported profit of 72 cents a share, excluding one-time items for the quarter, surpassing the 67 cents average estimate of analysts in a Bloomberg survey, according to Tuesday's earnings statement. Adjusted net income of $656 million was the highest in 8 years. Sales in North America, its largest region, slipped 1% from the third quarter, partly due to lower frack work attributed to weather delays, the Houston-based company said in the statement. Halliburton is the last of the big three oilfield service giants to disclose financial results for the final 3 months of 2022. This article is entitled, "Gasoline Prices Are Spiking Earlier Than Usual in Bad Omen for Drivers," by Chunzi Zhu, Bloomberg. Gasoline prices in the U.S. are spiking earlier than usual this year, raising concerns that meager inventories and heavy refinery maintenance will combine to cause another costly summer at the pump. Gasoline averaged $3.446 a gallon on Monday, the highest ever for this time of year, according to Auto Club AAA. The fuel has risen for 13 straight days, the longest streak of gains since prices hit a record in June. The surge is coming about a month before refiners' annual transition to producing more expensive summer grades of fuel typically boosts prices at the pump, raising the possibility that consumers won't get relief until after the peak driving season. The increase may move gasoline prices even higher up the political agenda in Washington, where the White House already has been using them as a cudgel against GOP-supported bills critical of its energy policy. Driving the price gain is a heavier-than-usual refinery maintenance season because of work that was deferred to take advantage of last year's price surge, as well as unplanned outages at multiple refineries because of issues ranging from a deadly fire to a severe winter storm. The seasonal increase in gasoline stockpiles during the winter demand lull of the past few months also failed to lift inventories from depressed levels. This article is entitled "OPEC Plus Waiting for Info," by Grant Smith, Salma El-Wardani, and Anthony DiPaola, Bloomberg. OPEC Plus delegates said they expect an advisory committee of ministers to recommend keeping oil production levels unchanged when they meet next week amid a tentative recovery in global demand. Saudi Arabia and its partners will hold a review of output levels on February 1st, after agreeing on significant cutbacks late last year to keep world crude markets in balance. Delegates from the group said privately that they expect the panel of ministers to maintain the status quo as they await clarity on the recovery in consumption in China and the impact of sanctions on Russian supply. International oil prices have climbed in the past 2 weeks, nearing $90 a barrel, as China, the world's biggest oil importer, abandons almost 3 years of strict anti-COVID restrictions. Still, the path of recovery remains uncertain as the country faces a resurgence of virus cases, prompting the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies to stay conservative. At the same time, OPEC Plus is waiting to see the full impact of European Union sanctions on member country Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. Measures targeting its crude oil sales took effect in December, and restrictions on its trade in refined products will arrive next month. But so far, Russian shipments have been surprisingly resilient. OPEC Plus looks increasingly likely to keep output levels unchanged, even after the scheduled meeting, Rod Al-Qadiri, an analyst at consultant Eurasia Group, said in a report. Prices have firmed, supply remains tight, and significant levels of uncertainty prevail for both supply and demand. A decision to hold steady by the Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee when it convenes online next week would be consistent with signals from top officials in the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. OPEC Secretary General Haytham Al-Gayus said earlier this month that he is, quote, cautiously optimistic, unquote, on the global economy as the nascent rebound in China is tempered by weakness in advanced economies.
Peak versus trough med levels dosage. Dear Dr. Roach, my doctor invariably prescribes 4 200 milligrams Advil ibuprofen to be taken 3 times every 24 hours for a few days. I suspect this will create peaks, but also create unwanted troughs. Compared to taking a smaller dose more frequently, that results in the same aggregate dose every 24 hours. My suspicion is that they are changing the optimal dosing schedule in order to achieve adherence. But I am a patient who is willing to do what works best. Whenever I tell them that I promise I will follow a better schedule, if one exists, they don't want to talk about it. Please sort out peaks versus troughs for me. There must be millions of people who would like to know this. R.A. Answer. I think most people are happy knowing that ibuprofen is safe to be taken the way it is recommended, but I hope some people will be interested in learning more about why we recommend dosing the way we do. You are taking the maximum dose of ibuprofen, 2,400 milligrams a day. Most people do not need this high of a dose, as a lower dose is just as effective for pain relief, and the highest doses are used when the anti-inflammatory effect is needed. Ibuprofen reaches its maximum level in the body about 2 hours after taking a tablet and will begin going down in the body afterward. Due to the liver inactivating the medication, every 2 hours or so, half of the dose is metabolized. Naturally, this is called the half-life of a medicine. So 4 hours after taking the dose, there's about half the maximum, while at 6 hours, there is 1/4 of the maximum level. By the time you take another dose, only 1/8 of the medicine is left in the body, compared with the peak level 2 hours after taking. Taking smaller doses more frequently will reduce the difference between the peak level and the lowest level, the trough, which occurs just before you take the next dose. So if you took 600 milligrams 4 times a day, say at 8 a.m., noon, 4 p.m., and 8 p.m., the ibuprofen level in your body would not get below half the maximum during the day.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 26. Beneficiary uses hardship gift for other purposes. Dear Abby, I have a moral and ethical dilemma. I nominated a coworker for a benefit through our company. The person was awarded what I consider to be a good sum, $5,000, for replacement hearing aids. 7 months have gone by, and this person still has the check and hasn't used the money for its intended purpose. They bought 2 beater cars and took a trip to New York City. I feel like I was duped. Should I call the hotline and let the foundation know my suspicions or let it go? I feel that this person got away with what I feel are dirty deeds. What to do? Signed, Regretting It in the West. Dear Regretting It, what to do is contact the foundation that sent the generous check, explain your concerns, and leave the ball in their court. They may indeed wish to follow up and possibly inform the police if there was fraud involved. Dear Abby, I'm stuck in a rut here. My girlfriend is anxious and depressed. I love her very much, and I want to help her. I understand that someone with anxiety and depression can be a handful, but sometimes I feel like I'm dealing with too much. My girlfriend is so deep in the state that no matter how I try, it seems like she doesn't want my help at all. How do I deal with this? I feel like I'm going mad. Signed, Need Guidance in the East. Dear Guidance, I am sure you love your girlfriend very much, but it is important to realize that depression and anxiety are medical conditions. You cannot fix them. The most helpful thing you could do for your girlfriend would be to convince her to discuss what's going on with her doctor so she can be referred to a licensed mental health provider. Medications are available that could help her, as well as talk therapy, which she may also need. Dear Abby, I've been a dental assistant for more than 20 years, and I'd like to share an observation with your readers. Over the years, We've seen many patients who diligently take care of their oral hygiene. Then, suddenly, we notice decay both clinically and on x-rays after years of no decay. We ask them, are you taking a new medication that's causing dry mouth? Have you started drinking some different beverage? Have you been eating more sweets? More often than not, they tell us nothing's changed. The problem often is sugar, where they don't expect it, in fiber supplements, meal replacement shakes, gummy vitamins, chewable antacids, vitamin water, etc. Many of these items contain a surprising amount of sugar. Please encourage your readers to read the nutrition labels of their supplements. It could save their teeth. Signed, Anti-Decay in Dallas. Dear Anti-Decay, thank you very much for educating my readers and me. This is something I had never considered, and I'll bet many of them haven't either. Your letter is an important one, and I hope they will heed it as I plan to.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.